Attention, patriots. Broadcasting from the Free Zones, Radio Free Redoubt begins in 5, 4, 3, 2...
Welcome to the Voice of the American Redoubt, episode 2004, the fourth podcast of 2020. 2020, we are in February already, and it has not stopped continuing. Is that the right way to put it? Being a really amazing. Wild time to be alive and to be watching the news cycle and what's happening in the news. President Trump was acquitted the day after he gave an amazing State of the Union speech. It was very, very patriotic, very upbeat, and he stuffed them. He's just not tired of winning. So it was just really great. Yesterday on KTW, I ripped Nancy Pelosi for ripping his speech and everything that that represented. Actually, I just got through maybe a quarter of it. I re-listened to his speech earlier today while I was working on the show and putting my notes together and had that going on in the background. And I was just thinking, man, there's so much more that I could have covered and should have. I wish I would have gone back through and pulled more, but I think I made the point well, that her tearing up that speech was really essentially a rejection of everything that he laid out in that speech. And there was just some amazing testimonies, some amazing messages, and something that, I mean, anybody in their right mind. Well, maybe that's it right there. That's the definer right there. Anybody in their right mind would support, and nobody in their right mind would reject. But we're talking about Nancy Pelosi and the socialists, the communists, the globalists, the Democrats, and she's the head of them. So I guess that makes sense. So we want to talk about some of the stuff going on in the world. I'm going to talk about some things going on in the American Redoubt as far as the law and legal aspects of it. And I'm going to spend a couple of segments talking about firearms and the Second Amendment and our right to bear arms as is enumerated in the Constitution. We don't have those rights because they're in the Constitution. Well, we still enjoy those rights because of the wisdom of the men who put those in the Constitution. But those rights are enumerated in the Constitution, which means we already have those rights because of because we exist. God and the nature's God and nature allows every living creature the right to defend itself. And so anyway, I want to talk about that. Some of the arguments, I'll tell you what, they're going all out right now. I've had listener letters expressing great frustration with where they are living and some of the laws that are coming down the line. But folks, it's not just about guns. I'll talk about that when we get into those next segments. But first of all, let's get the news and commentary knocked out of the way. The news and commentary is brought to you by Glenn Tate and the 299 Days book series and his bride, Shelby Gallagher. She's got the three book series out, The Great State. All 10 books in his series, three books in hers. Both of those have audio books out as well. So you can go and check all of those out at prepping2-0.com, and that's their podcast. They've got after several years, finally, it was great to see Glenn kick off a podcast to talk about prepping, but not just for the basics, the beginner, but what do you do when you got your food storage, you have a nice battle rifle, maybe for you and your spouse, maybe everyone in your family. You've got a basic combat load of ammo plus three times three. You're pretty much good to go. You got the basics. Now what? And that's the Prepping 2.0 podcast. So, of course, the website is Prepping2-0. You can't put a 2.0 in there. It really confused the URL. So it's Prepping2-0.com. And that's where you can learn more about their books as well. From the Inland Northwest Report, Rob Chase does a great job running that. But there was a contributor or an article that they picked up by Tracy Watson talking about the Ring of Fire earthquakes accelerating as something big approaches. And, you know, we watch it in the American Redoubt. We don't have a lot of earthquakes except around the Yellowstone area. But the Cascadia subduction zone is part of that that Pacific belt, that circum-Pacific belt that is commonly known as the Ring of Fire. And it is 24,900 miles, like a horseshoe-shaped stretch of the Pacific Ocean that's famous for its frequent earthquakes and numerous active volcanoes. Now I'm reading from the article. Located between several tectonic plates, the Ring of Fire is home to 75% of our planet's volcanoes and 90% of the Earth's earthquakes. Did you guys know that? Well, now I'm going to go off script here, off the article here. The Cascadia subduction zone is part of that, and it is a major tectonic plate, a couple of plates that are jammed up against each other. And every couple of hundred years, they break free. And it is a massive earthquake when it does. And they say we're overdue and it's a matter of time before this happens. So it's on our minds. We see a lot of volcanic and earthquake activity. So we watch this very closely. But there is quite an uptick in activity. And that's what this article is about. Clearly, earthquakes and volcanoes are to be expected in this area, but three strong earthquakes striking the Ring of Fire within a 24-hour period on December 24th has experts sitting up and taking note, with concerns mounting that something big is brewing. And we're going to watch that closer. There is going to be another major Cascadia rising type of exercise. Based on a scenario-based exercise coming up in the next couple of years. We're going to be participating in that. And before we just observed, but we will definitely be joining in on that exercise when that happens. So anyway, I just wanted to bring that article to your attention so you can go and check that out for yourselves. Speaking of Washington State, by the way, that Cascadia subduction zone runs from Vancouver, British Columbia, down off the coast, down past Washington State, Oregon, and the Northern California. And it's also expected to be at least a 9.0 minimum, and a devastating tsunami is projected to follow. So it's a double whammy event. So, speaking of Washington State here, and maybe this is why God's going to allow it to happen, the legislature is in session right now, so everyone should be scared. Washington Democrats are pushing mandatory LGBT sex ed for kindergartners. This is where we are. This should continue to shock us. We're not surprised. It's a fallen world, and it's getting, you know, toward those times when we're told it would be like the days of Noah, right? So it's going to be evil and vile, and we're rushing headlong toward that type of an environment, a world. And here's just some examples where our legislators are trying to make this law. They're mandating the indoctrination of your children into sexual deviancy. Parents in the state of Washington are fighting a Democrat bill that would mandate LGBTQ-focused sex ed for children, including kindergartners. Breitbart broke this, but we do have legislative updates coming out. But Democrats in the State House are pushing for House Bill 2184, a measure that would mandate comprehensive sexual health education by the year 2022. So Informed Parents of Washington, a group that describes itself as a coalition of parents dedicated to fighting comprehensive sex education in sex with three X's, like triple X, in our schools, and legislation that imposes upon parental rights, is warning parents about the dangers of the legislation. Now, there are some legislators who have testified about this, about how horrific this is. Representative Michelle Caldier, a Republican, was in a provided a radio report out of Olympia. And she said, when I looked at the curriculum, I'd be happy to read some of this stuff. Remember, she's on a radio show. She said, but I will tell you, I know that the chair would gavel me because it is completely inappropriate for me to say here. Caldier said about the proposed mandated sex ed curriculum. And she said, I think that if it is inappropriate for me to say on the days, I don't think that it's something that I would want to teach kindergartners. And that's the point right there. I was reading through some of the descriptive language in this bill that the curriculum that they want to mandate to describe to the children. I don't think you could even say on the radio. And it would be inappropriate to say during legislature on the floor. But this is the language that our teachers are being mandated to tell kindergartners. It's just unbelievable. But I'll post this story in the highlights and resources posting. But see, this is my point when I was starting to go into, we get so excited about our Second Amendment rights. Oh, they're taking our guns. I'm going to fight for my guns. But it seems like if it's Second Amendment or gun related, you'll be able to draw massive crowds. And I think that's why they haven't pushed so hard. Because if they can steal and rob the rest of our rights, our property rights, our other constitutional rights, they walk up and take it and walk away. It's like taking a candy from a baby. You just snatch it right out of their hands and walk away, and there's nothing you can do about it. And most people don't even actually pay attention to it unless it's their guns. Don't take my guns, because I need my guns, because our guns are for defending all of our other rights. But all of your other rights are already being stripped away without a whimper. So it's almost as if they don't need to come after the guns to prevent you from stopping them from taking the rest of your rights. They're already well on their way of taking the rest of our rights. There's nothing really much left. I mean, they've got our children. They're mandating everything from vaccines to sexual perversion, having transvestites come into your school or your public library and having your children sit on some pervert pedophile's lap while he's reading your child a story about homosexuality. And if you speak out against it, well, you're just the worst kind of hate monger, right? And that's got some people riled up too. They've pushed too fast too soon, and it got a lot of people riled up. Quite a bit of pushback. But for the most part, they pretty much have just done whatever they want because they haven't touched the guns. Now they're starting to come after the guns because, well, they've pretty much got everything else. California wants to force people to vote. That's right. Redoubt News covered this. People could be subjected to fines or even incarceration if they don't choose to vote. A liberal legislator from Nancy Pelosi's San Francisco Bay Area has decided that automatic voter registration is not enough. He wants compulsory voting with penalties that could include imprisonment. Unbelievable. Mark Levine has introduced AB 2070 for compulsory voting. Current law allows for voting as an option. Well, it's not an option. It's a right. And I think it's a duty. But, of course, Winston Churchill said that you spend much time just talking to the general public, and that's pretty much the best argument against socialism right there. But I'm paraphrasing, of course. But this is where they're going now, see, because they've spent decades building up this demographic of Democrats, registered Democrats. And I've spoken to people that have redoubted from California that have worked within the system of social and health and human services, and including illegal aliens and other people that are being introduced to the welfare system. And they, right there, they're encouraged to register to vote. And when they talk him into registering for voting, they're saying, yeah, well, we need to get you registered to vote first. And like, oh, okay. And then they automatically fill in Democrat. I am not kidding. This is the testimony of somebody who's worked. Now, this is someone who immigrated here legally from El Salvador, absolutely is appalled, offended at the immigration policies and the attitudes in California and the Democrats. And she was offended. And she said she saw it day after day after day. These young people would come in, or old people that would come in to be signed up for welfare. And they would, the first thing they would do is register them to vote. And they would, by default, check the Democrat box unless they specifically requested to change it to Republican. But see, now they have just millions of registered Democrats, but most of them don't vote. That's a problem. So what's going to happen next? They're going to say, if you don't vote, if you don't show proof that you voted, we're going to pull your welfare funding. Is that next? Your WIC payments, your EBT card. We can't put new funds on your EBT card unless you've shown that you have voted. That would be a game. We're talking millions and millions of votes for the communists through coercion. Now they're trying to pass a law mandating that people vote. This is like the Bolshevism. This is the Bolshevik revolution. This is the Bolsheviks taking over. Unbelievable. So anyway, let's see. Let's go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the stuff going on in Virginia. Some people are furious, and they have every right to be. All right, that and more when we come back here at the Voice of the American Redoubt.
And lastly, obligation number 8. Dedicate a part of your everyday life to the bringing of these requirements of American citizenship to the attention of fellow students, fellow workers, neighbors, and friends. Is it too much to ask that we fulfill these obligations of citizenship? If we think so, we should read again the history of the founding of this nation and consider the hardships of the people who made possible our freedom. They felt that no challenge was too great if freedom was at stake. That spirit carried them on. It created for us the foundation of our great heritage. We have seen it flare up and burn brightly in every national emergency, on the battlefields and at home. The socialists, the communists, and their followers would like to see the American spirit extinguished. If each of us will rise to the occasion, if every citizen, young and old, will accept the challenge of his citizenship, then the socialist and communist and their followers will not prevail, and America will go on toward the fulfillment of her great world destiny.
Dr. Clifton L. Gaines Jr. was our instructor. This is a continuing series based on the unique political and economic system which has made America great.
This is segment two of The Voice of the American Redoubt. Thank you guys for sticking with us. Segment two is brought to you by Selkirk Mountain Real Estate, helping folks just like you get strategically relocated to the northern part of the panhandle of Idaho. If that's where you are looking, then check them out, selkirkmountainrealestate.com. And there are more and more people that are redoubting. They're taking the gap and they're moving to Wyoming. They're moving to the Kalispell area of Montana. They're moving to central Idaho, northern Idaho. Folks are getting off the left coast of Washington, and they're moving inland into Liberty State, which is still under the rule of Washington, but maybe not for long. Let's fingers crossed, right? I mean, there's the LGBTQ mandated curriculum for all school children, including kindergartners. If that's not enough reason for Liberty State, I don't know what is. Maybe they need to pass a magazine ban and then people will get angry. I don't know. But anyway, people are looking to move into the American Redoubt, and we're hearing from them. And so Selkirk Mountain Real Estate is helping people do that. And there is, here's one right here. John Jacob, I need help. New Mexico just passed a red flag law. I will not live under the yoke of that tyranny. I need to redoubt, probably to Wyoming or Idaho. I have some friends in Emmett, Idaho. My family owns a large pecan farm here. My job experience is mostly on the farm, even though I have a bachelor's degree in business admin from New Mexico State University. I will need help before the law goes into effect. I will stay in contact. All right. I feel you. But this is happening across the country. And I've been telling people, you cannot come to the American Redoubt and not dig in and get ready to fight, because they've got their sights set on these conservative strongholds, trying to take them down. Because if they can take them down, if they can get their nose under the tent, then the rest of the dominoes will fall so much easier. We've got to come here and not just go, oh, I feel so free, and you just check out and don't do anything. You got to fight more now than ever. We need fighters. We need fighters in these elected positions, and the attacks are strong. They're going after Representative Heather Scott right now, just big time. And of course, this Daniel Walters, this little dork from this tabloid out of Spokane, he's trying to, you know, get some mileage out of some of the hit pieces on Representative Matt Shea, and where Heather Scott was mentioned as, you know, going down to Malheur. So she's tied up in this domestic terrorism stuff too. You know, it's unbelievable. But he sent me a email saying, I'm doing a story on Heather Scott and you're mentioned in it. And so I thought maybe you'd like to answer some questions. Well, I had a few words for him, but I didn't cuss, but I just basically told him, why are you running hit pieces for the communists instead of real journalism? I said, you know, Heather Scott is a Christian. She's a patriot. She loves her country. She loves her community. Unlike you, you opportunistic turd. And he quoted me. He actually put that in his article. He didn't put it all. He didn't put everything in there, but he put that part in there. I was actually kind of surprised. But that's exactly what he is, an opportunistic turd. Because with all the information that's floating out there about somebody, he picks and chooses exactly the stuff that's going to try to put him in a bad light. And then the spin and the delivery as well. But we are under attack even in the American Redoubt. It's not just New Mexico. It's not just Virginia. It's not just California. I have a quote right here. It's amazing timing. While I'm doing the show, and I normally don't even look at my phone, I put it on silent, but it flashed up and I saw this. A friend sent this to me. It is a screenshot from a YouTube video with a quote from the Democrat candidate for governor for the state of Idaho. She's hoping that she doesn't have a snowball's chance in Idaho yet, but they are making it's stunning the progress, if you want to call it that, the regression the regressivists have made, the strides that they have made, the stuff that they have accomplished we wouldn't have believed 20 years ago in the mid-90s. How far you'd think, oh, people will be up in arms if they try. Well, they're not. This homosexual stuff with our children. Meh. I mean, a few people are angry. You got this little group of, you know, insignificant little group of parents that are trying to raise awareness. But what are they? 9 people. Nobody else cares. But here it is in Idaho. Paulette Jordan, quote, "The AR-15 doesn't have a place here in Idaho." That's the Democrat hopeful for the Idaho governor race. Quote, "The AR-15 doesn't have a place here in Idaho." But it's just AR-15s, right? It's just assault weapons that they're after. I mean, they're not trying to take all your guns. It's just certain guns that they don't need to have, right? Well, hey, let's look at Jay Inslee. It's on the cover of Guns. They will tell you that they're not after your guns. Yet, what did Washington Governor Jay Inslee say recently? Here's a quote from him. It's him. It's his tweet on Twitter, his statement. I'm quoting right here. "There should not be weapons of war on our streets. In 2019, we ended the sale of assault weapons to people under 21. This year, I'm working with the Washington legislature and Bob Ferguson, the attorney general, to ban them altogether." To ban guns altogether. Do you believe that the liberal extremists do not want your guns? Oh, we're just trying to keep military grade assault weapons out of the hands of 21-year-olds. We're not after your guns. We just want to make sure that if you're under 21, you don't have them. Well, now he says, now I'm working to ban them altogether. And with the help of the propagandists, if you look like in Virginia right now, the people are just, well, up in arms. Figuratively, I'm not so sure. Well, here's some of the articles. Would you do a search there for gun laws? Prospect of gun control in Virginia draws threats and promises of violence. Prospect of gun control in Virginia draws threats and promises of armed protest in Richmond. Ignorant gun toters. I hope they all get arrested and lose their rights to own any kind of guns at all. That's one article out of the Roanoke.com. Here's another one from Inside Nova. In contrast to large crowds calling for local Second Amendment resolutions, Virginia voters strongly support new gun control measures ahead of the new legislative session in January. So all of their mainstream media around them, all the white noise that they're creating is saying, yeah, go for it. This is what the people want. These people that are protesting, they're just a small minority. They don't represent it. The voters strongly support gun control measures, not the protesters, right? The protesters don't want gun control, but the voters strongly support gun control. You see the delineation that they're trying to make here? You're either a protester or you're a voter. Who counts? Voters, right? They don't mention that the Second Amendment and Constitution advocates are also voters. So the leftists and the anti-constitutionalists in state legislators are going all out across the country. They are not holding back. This is not a red flag law in New Mexico. They're doing it in Oregon, in Washington, and they're pushing for it in Virginia. They're doing it across the country. And now you've got this woman that thinks that she's deserving to be the governor of Idaho saying AR-15s have no place in Idaho. There's enough AR-15s in Idaho alone probably to arm the 4 states around them, except the 4 states around them all have their own. It's an extremely heavily armed area. Well, the people in Virginia, they're not just keeping them to go to the range and go plinking. They're like the founding fathers. They're concerned that they may be forced to use those to secure their rights if they're forced to. Fox News has got an article here. Virginia advances gun control bill that bans the sale of some semi-automatic weapons. Some. How about all? And high-capacity magazines. Of course, the Virginia legislature is going to advance these gun control bills because they're being told by the local media that that's what the voters want. They think that they've got all the people on their side, and it's just a few loudmouths that are opposed to it. They actually think they have the moral high ground. They think they're doing the right thing. Some of them. Some of them know exactly what they're doing. Despite overwhelming opposition from gun owners and gun rights groups, Virginia Democrat lawmakers on Friday advanced legislation that would ban the sale of some semi-automatic firearms, as well as end the possession of high-capacity magazines. Hold on to that little phrase right there. They're going to end the possession of high-capacity magazines. Now, a high-capacity magazine is a integral part, the fundamental part of a lot of those combat rifles. So what they're trying to do is render a weapon that would be effective in a civil defense situation and render it ineffective. Gun supporters packed a state house committee room and shouted in protest when legislation to ban the sale of assault weapons like AR-15 style rifles, prohibit the possession of silencers, which are not really silencers, they're just sound suppressors, as well as magazines that hold more than 12 rounds passed out of committee. What? 12 rounds? Well, who's the committee that sat around and decided this arbitrary number of 12? 12 rounds. So you won't be able to shoot as many people. You can't have a 20-round magazine. Only you can't have a 13-round magazine. You'll be a felon. 12 rounds is the limit. Well, where'd this arbitrary number come from? Because, you know, a couple of states over, it's a 10-round. Anything over 10 rounds is a felony. Arbitrary laws, arbitrary numbers, which are unconstitutional because they're essentially an infringement on the right of the people to keep and bear arms. If they're going to make a 20-round magazine a felony, that's an infringement. But anyway, this legislation passed out of committee. The uproar caused Capitol Police to clear the committee room of almost every spectacular spectator, following the vote. So Virginia has been ground zero for the country's heated debate over gun control. All right, so we got people there, according to this article, and we've all seen statements on the website, people saying that they doubt if the measure, they doubt it would be effective, and that, quote, I have friends that are not going to comply, one person said. So this is where people have reached the point, wherever you are, if you're in Washington, if you're in California, if you're in Virginia, you know what? They can pass whatever laws they want. It doesn't matter now. You pass whatever laws you want. You already know you've been put on notice. It's unlawful. And we have a long history, especially in Virginia. I mean, the license plates have "Don't Tread on Me" on them. Right. And that's where it all began. Concord, Lexington Green. It all started in Virginia. And now they're doing it again. They're going to try to disarm the Patriots. And the people now are at the point where they're saying, it doesn't, you know, pass whatever laws you want because you have to enforce them. And when you have to enforce them, that's when people are going to get hurt. That's people's attitudes right now. And you've got a lot of law enforcement, a lot, and the county commissioners who are saying, we're not going to enforce it. It's not going to happen. So it goes back to how are they going to enforce it? Use state police? Are they going to use National Guard? Against people who say, I don't care what laws you pass from this point forward, pass whatever you want. We're fine with it. It's good. Until you try to enforce it. And that's when there will be a heavy price to pay. It's when those that want to take your rights away, regardless, they completely disregard law, the rule of law, the Constitution, which they swore to uphold, their fundamental duty, and that's to protect the rights of the citizens, and they go completely in the opposite direction, and they make it their fundamental, they make it their primary mission is to violate the citizens' rights. I don't see a way out of this through voting or diplomacy or... I don't, they're forcing the situation where people, you know, the Jews tried to comply and comply and comply and comply until they had barbed wire around their neighborhood in Warsaw, until they had no choice but to fight. And that's what these, it's almost like that's what the left wants. Well, the Virginia Secretary of Public Safety and Homeland Security, Brian Moran, said a ban on selling assault weapons and high-capacity magazines is needed to help prevent mass shootings, which they won't, and they know this, or at least limit the damage mass shooters can inflict, which it will not. He cited the fact that the shooter in Virginia Tech Massacre 2007 had a handgun with a high-capacity magazine. So now he can just have 12-round magazine, I guess, instead of a 18-round magazine. So he's just going to have 8 magazines instead of 4. But he said, assault weapons are not protected by the Second Amendment because they are weapons of war, Moran said. I think they misspelled it. I think it's moron. Virginia Secretary of Public Safety Brian Moran said, assault weapons are not protected by the Second Amendment because they are weapons of war. Isn't that interesting? Well, I want to talk about a case. This very interesting point that he makes, that combat rifles are not protected by the Second Amendment because those are just made for war. I want to point you to a case. I've talked about this in the past, but I think it's just appropriate to bring it back up. We call it the Miller case, or the United States versus Miller from 1938. In 1934, a law was passed. It was the first federal law regulating firearms. It hadn't happened before. It was never considered the federal government's duty to even go there. But someone thought it would be a great idea. Right about the time that communists started weaseling their way into our government. But the National Firearms Act of 1934 was enacted. And what it did was it put a $200 tax stamp on machine guns and sawed-off shotguns. It didn't say you couldn't have them. They didn't ban them, but they just imposed a fee, a tax of $200 for when you purchase a machine gun or a sawed-off shotgun. What they're trying to do is make it cost prohibitive to reduce the number of people who had machine guns and sawed-off shotguns. They didn't ban them. Well, what happened was this guy, Jack Miller, he was a bad guy. He was a bank robber. He's running moonshine and so on. But he got arrested with a sawed-off shotgun, and he didn't pay his $200 tax stamp. Now, it's perfectly fine for you to have a sawed-off shotgun because they're not dangerous at all unless you don't have a $200 tax stamp. Then it's so dangerous you can't have it. And he didn't pay his $200 tax stamp, so he was arrested. Now, this ended up going to court, and the judge actually ruled in their favor. And what he said was that the relevant section of the Firearms Act was in violation of the Second Amendment and therefore unconstitutional. Well, the case was quickly appealed to the Supreme Court because the government didn't want their little pet law to be shot down. So it went to the Supreme Court. Well, in the Supreme Court in May of 1939, they said there was an absence of any evidence that the sawed-off shotgun had any relationship to the militia. That was the argument. It was we don't know of any evidence saying that basically a shotgun has value as a militia type of firearm. So they kicked it back to the lower court. Well, Jack Miller ended up dying before this court case took place. But the court finding said that there's no evidence that had been presented to prove that a sawed-off shotgun was a useful military weapon. And of course, that was actually correct because Miller, he never showed up in court. So the case was returned to the lower court where Miller, if living, could have made further arguments on his own behalf. He could have easily and correctly argued that the short-barreled shotguns had been popular military weapons in the trenches of the First World War. So, lucky for the federal government, he was dead, and he wasn't able to make that argument. So, the argument against being able to have a certain type of firearm, or to have a certain type of firearm without a tax stamp, it was ruled that the shotgun had no military value, so therefore it wasn't protected by the Second Amendment or by the Constitution. Do you understand what happened there in that ruling? They're saying, essentially, you don't have a constitutional right to have a sawed-off shotgun because it doesn't have any military application. They recognized then, even in the court, they recognized that the reason why you have the Second Amendment, the guaranteed right to bear arms, is as a militia, as a force necessary for the security of a free state. So a hunting rifle, in their argument, was not protected by the Constitution because it has no military value. Essentially, the argument is that you have the constitutionally protected right to own any military firearm if it has a military value, because that was the intent of the Second Amendment of the Constitution. Isn't that interesting? So we need to look at the, and of course, part of that I read to you from, and you can find this on the internet, look up Miller versus the United States, Second Amendment, Firearms Act. And there's tons of articles covering this. Some of the parts that I just read to you was from an article at Keep and Bear Arms written by Dr. Michael Brown out of Vancouver, Washington. But it's all over this. This is a very commonly known case in the, in the firearms culture. So the argument that you shouldn't be able to have something because it's a military firearm is exactly opposite of what it was intended. But if you really want to know what the intent of the Second Amendment was, you need to go back to the founders' intent. And that's what I'm going to talk about next in the next segment. Virginia also took its first step on its gun ban, another article covered by Paul Bedard. And I'll link that in the highlights and resources posting as well. Things are really heating up in Virginia, but it's not just Virginia. It's not just New Mexico. This is happening. They're so bold. They are running full steam ahead toward all of our rights, but they have definitely taken off the gloves when it comes to coming after our Second Amendment rights. Let's talk about what the founders intended when they said every American citizen should be armed. We'll be right back. Segment 3 coming up. Are you prepared for an economic, socio-political collapse in America? Do you wonder how something like that could be possible? What would that even look like? I recommend Glenn Tate's 10-book series titled 299 Days. From a lawyer and government insider's perspective, he lays out a plausible scenario that could very well come about if we continue on the path we're on as a country. Through his fictional character, he lays out his own real-life journey to prepare himself and his family for the possibility of a future full of difficult challenges and what seem like impossible choices. 299 Days is a high-action dystopian novel written from the perspective of the average Joe American and outlines realistic plans and action steps that you could implement to prepare yourself and those around you for the difficult possibilities ahead. Go to 299days.com to learn more. Segment 3 of The Voice of the American Redoubt is brought to you by Strategic Landscape Design, designs to help keep you safe and to help you thrive with your land, property that you want to get the most out of. As far as securing your water rights, you want to lay everything out just right strategically so you've got the best food production, defensibility, everything you want to build into your retreat property, and you need some help, professional help with that, check them out, strategiclandscapedesign.com, and they also offer remote services. So don't forget to, if you're not living in the American Redoubt, they're still helping people wherever you are. Even if you have a couple pieces of property that you're trying to decide on, you want some professional input there, those folks will help you out. They do a great job, and they're just great folks, good patriots. And they've helped a lot of people. All right, so let's talk about founder's intent, because you know, when they say, you know, firearms have military firearms have no place on America's streets. Those, you know, military and law enforcement only. And we're not trying to take your hunting firearms. Well, that's not true. They want to take all firearms, but especially your the most effective firearms available to us for defending against tyranny. Well, that's the top of their list to take away from you. So, and you know, they wouldn't have mass shootings and everything else if they weren't trying to head us off of the morality cliff in the first place. The first step, get prayer back in schools. So that's what President Trump's, that was on his agenda. God bless him. This is amazing. Some of the stuff that he's doing, I don't know. He's the best president since who? How far back you want to go? He's doing such bold things since maybe Jefferson. Really amazing. But we got to look at the founders' intent. When they wrote the Constitution, what did they mean? Did they mean we should just have firearms for hunting? And Thomas Jefferson actually had this to say, really, really important. There's a great article I want to point you guys to that I'll have in the highlights and resources posting. It's called theroadtoconcord.com. It talks about the original intent. What did the founders mean by arms? And Thomas Jefferson had this to say in a letter to William Johnson in 1823. So he had plenty of time to think about what we meant by arms and what we meant by what we put in the Constitution. Plenty of time to reflect on it, right? So in this letter, he says, on every occasion of constitutional interpretation, let us carry ourselves back to the time when the Constitution was adopted. Recollect the spirit manifested in the debates, and instead of trying to force what meaning may be squeezed out of the text or invented against it, instead, let us conform to the probable one in which it was passed. Boom. James Madison backed him up. In a letter in 1824 to Henry Lee, he wrote, I entirely concur in the propriety of resorting to the sense in which the Constitution was accepted and ratified by the nation. In that sense alone, it is the legitimate Constitution. And if that is not the guide in expounding it, there may be no security. And where are we today? We are not looking at the Constitution. The legitimate Constitution as it was passed, and look, here we are at the edge of not having security in our state, as in the United States. So, this is where we have to use logic. First, what did the word arms mean? Because they're saying, well, when they said arms, they had flintlocks. They had black powder muskets. They didn't have AR-15s. Well, they said arms. So let's look at the definition of what arms was in 1828. Not what Google is going to take you to, what arms means. Let's look at the Webster's Dictionary. It was the authoritative dictionary for the meaning of words in 1828. Arms, noun. It's weapons, definition, weapons of offense or armor for defense and protection of the body. Isn't that interesting? It's not just arms, it's also armor for defense and the protection of the body. Because there's places like Washington State and others where they're trying to ban body armor. So we go back to the original intent of the founding fathers and say what they meant by arms and the dictionary that they were using to define words. It includes weapons of offense, not defense. It's weapons of offense. That would be a combat rifle and armor for defense and protection of the body. War and hostility is the second. Arms means war or hostility. To be in arms, to be in a state of hostility or in a military life. To arms is a phrase which denotes a taking arms for war or hostility, particularly a summoning to war. To take to arms. To take arms is to arm for an attack or a defense. Bred to arms denotes that a person has been educated to the profession of a soldier. Sire arms are such as may be charged with powder as cannon, muskets, mortars, etc. Any stand of arms consists of a musket, bayonet, cartridge box, and a belt with a sword. But for common soldiers, a sword is not necessary. That was in the second definition. So it's very clear what they meant. Weapons of offense or armor for defense and protection of the body. So let's look at some of the words that some of the founding fathers had to say about arms. What did they mean by it? Well, Tench Cox, who was a legislator with the, the Pennsylvania, what was it at the time? It was like the legislature. But this is what he wrote in the Pennsylvania Gazette. The power of the sword, say the minority, is in the hands of Congress. My friends and countrymen, it is not so. For the powers of the sword are in the hands of the yeomanry of America from 16 to 60. The militia of these free commonwealths, entitled and accustomed to their arms, when compared with any possible army, must be tremendous and irresistible. Who are the militia? Are they not ourselves? Is it feared, then, that we shall turn our arms, each man, against his own bosom? Congress has no power to disarm the militia. Their swords and every terrible implement of the soldier are the birthright of Americans. That's our birthright, friends. He wrote that in the Pennsylvania Gazette, February of 1788. So the Revolutionary War is very fresh in the minds of our founding fathers. Oh, he was also, I think, part of the Constitutional Convention. I got to pull it up again. He also said in 1788, the unlimited power of the sword is not in the hands of either the federal or state governments, but where I trust in God, it will always remain in the hands of the people. He also wrote, whereas civil rulers, not having their duty to the people duly before them, may attempt to tyrannize, and as the military forces which must be occasionally raised to defend our country might pervert their power to the injury of their fellow citizens, the people are confirmed by the article, talking about the Second Amendment, in their right to keep and bear their private arms. Remarks on the first part of the amendments to the federal constitution under the pseudonym A Pennsylvanian in the Philadelphia Federal Gazette in 1789, June 18th. He says also, the militia, who are in fact the effective part of the people at large, will render many troops quite unnecessary. They will form a powerful check upon the regular troops and will generally be sufficient to overawe them. October 21st, 1787. So the argument that we shouldn't have arms, that only the military should have, is a moot argument. It is a false premise. It is the precise reason for being armed, and those are precisely the arms that the citizenry was intended to have by the founding fathers. How are you going to overawe a tyrannous force sent against you if you only have muskets? Because that's what the founding fathers had. Well, if we're going to use that as the standard, then we need to have all of our military and our law enforcement turn in every firearm that they own, and they need to be reissued muskets. Because that's what the founding fathers intended, right? So I'll continue on. Now, this is from Alexander Hamilton in one of the Federalist Papers, number 28, to be precise. And this was written in January of 1788. He said, if circumstances should at any time oblige the government to form any army of any magnitude, that army can never be formidable to the liberties of the people while there is a large body of citizens, little if at all, inferior to them in discipline and the use of arms, who stand ready to defend their own rights and those of their fellow citizens. This appears to me the only substitute that can be devised for a standing army and the best possible security against it, if it should exist. Alexander Hamilton. So we look at the founder's intent and the argument, these lame arguments of these people saying you don't need to have these types of firearms because, well, they have no military value. In fact, that's what this Virginia Secretary of Public Safety and Homeland Security that's pushing for this and backing up this unlawful agenda. Brian Moron said assault weapons are not protected by the Second Amendment because they are weapons of war. They are weapons of war, which is precisely why they're protected by the Second Amendment. And I would even argue that an M240G machine gun is also protected. Anything that any infantry platoon would be carrying, the citizenry should have access to and should be in possession of, not just access to. So anyway, we'll take a break, come back. I'm going to talk about the some additional resources and some updates with the coronavirus. It is spreading. It is a very serious virus. Not something that I still do not think is something we should be panicking over. And I said right from the beginning, it's not something to be taken lightly, but it is serious. Now, how serious? There's so much information. Like I said, there's conflicting information. Let's keep our heads about us and keep driving on. But let's be watchful of this. And there are measures that we can take to mitigate the effects of this should it come to a community near you or to your family. We'll be right back with Radio Free Redoubt Segment 4 right after this.
Greetings, Patriots. This is Chris Walsh, broker at Revolutionary Realty, located in the heart of America's Great Redoubt, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. I sell land and backwoods cabins to America's Patriots every day. Creeks, springs, timber, and game, good survivable property without natural disasters. The state of Idaho has a balanced budget, and our people believe deeply in the Second Amendment. Call me today at 208-667-1776, or visit me online at www.revrealty.us. I'll be glad to serve you, and God bless America.
There is no retreat but in submission and slavery. Our chains are forged. Their clanking may be heard on the plains of Boston. The war is inevitable. And let it come! I repeat it, sir. Let it come! It is in vain, sir, to extenuate the matter. Gentlemen may cry, peace, peace, but there is no peace. The war is actually begun. The next gale that sweeps from the north will bring to our ears the clash of resounding arms. Our brethren are already in the field. Why stand we here idle? What is it that gentlemen wish? What would they have? Is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death!
And we're here with the fourth and final segment of Radio Free Redoubt. I love that. I love that speech. Give me liberty or give me death. That's just, man, plus with some five-finger death punch to it. I love it. That's just, it is great. Grand. isn't it? Segment four is brought to you by Works Holsters, Works LLC, custom-made Kydex holsters made right here in the American Redoubt with a lifetime guarantee on all their products. And also, they are really moving toward focusing on holsters for pistols with accessories like lasers and tactical lights. It's hard to find the right holster that will hold your model of firearm, your handgun, with the specific model of tactical light or the laser that you happen to have. It's hard. That's what they make, custom-made holsters specifically for the setup that you've got. Check them out at Works LLC and get in touch with them. And also for secure email, they also have moved to Proton Mail if you want to correspond with them more securely. Check them out. At works.com, and then switch over to Proton for corresponding there. So with the coronavirus now, we've got 40,500 confirmed cases. Of course, the overwhelming majority of those are in the mainland China. Other countries outside, we've got 15 cases in Malaysia, 16 in Malaysia, 15 in Australia, 14 cases in Germany, 13 Vietnam, 12 in the United States, 11 in France. So with the total deaths now of approaching 1,000 deaths, 910 deaths. And of course, most of those are, again, mainland China. Now, these are official numbers, if you want to believe those, which I don't believe those. I think the death rate is probably much higher. I think the Chinese government is covering much more. And as we often say, is the rule of thumb is whatever a communist government is telling you, don't believe it. It's not true. They don't tell the truth. Communists are not capable of telling the truth. And our own government is not that much better. All right. So especially when you got a lot of globalists and communists infiltrating with all the governments in the Western hemisphere. But total recovered 3,301. Depending on who you believe with some of this information, and the way that it appears that this virus is engineered, and it definitely does appear to be engineered. Some people are trying to push that down and say, "Well, no, this is viruses mutate, so it's not just because it mutates doesn't mean it was weaponized." But no, there's actually there's sufficient evidence now to say this is definitely a weaponized type of virus. Matter of fact, there's a big investigation right now with this these Canadian scientists where this coronavirus was first came up missing out of a Canadian lab, and investigations with ties to a Chinese getting their hands on this virus, and it's making its way to China, being smuggled out. Well, this Canadian scientist who was involved in that project was at a speaking engagement in Africa and turns up dead. So, I mean, the plot thickens. So I don't know where the truth lies, somewhere in the middle. As I've said, there are just one end of the extreme to the other explanations for this virus and how serious it is or isn't. It is. I do not believe this is just your typical flu. It is obviously the coronavirus is a flu virus, but I also believe just because of the connections between a bio lab in Canada, this stuff comes up missing. It falls in the hands of Chinese. There are some espionage involved there. So this is in my, I believe this was a weaponized virus, and I think it got out of control and it got loose somehow, some way, even if not intentionally, I don't know, but everything else is conjecture. What I do know is that I live here in the American Redoubt. I'm not too worried about it, but it could make its way here. So I was looking at survival blogs, some good resources over there. And somebody just posted somebody sent me this Dr. Syrkus coronavirus infections, but with dosages and treatments for coronavirus infections. Let's read a little bit of it to you. Because we are in the middle of a declared international health crisis, I will start each essay with an update. I am quickly writing a booklet on the coronavirus and how to treat it to maximize the chances one will not die from it. So far, the news is not being overly dramatic. In other words, they're playing it down, meaning things are just building up, like the quiet beginning of a major classical piece, just the soft violins, he writes. The next 2 weeks, though, the drums probably will beat and the horns will shout because efforts to contain the virus within the boundaries of Wuhan failed. A report 5 million people had already traveled from Wuhan for New Year's prior to the currently imposed travel lockdown. As many as 50 million people from 16 surrounding cities, in addition to Wuhan, are not allowed to travel until the crisis abates. Now, this was January 31st. So this is already 10 days old. And we've seen the numbers grow exponentially as far as cases, confirmed cases. But there's, I'm going to post that in the highlights and resources posting, the link to this article. I thought it was a great article, and these are dosages and treatments for coronavirus infections to increase your survivability. And this is a very, very survivable virus. There's also some reports indicating that this could be one of those viruses that your antibodies that are built up will not prevent you from getting it again. So you could get over it and then get it again, theoretically. I've not seen any evidence to prove that, but there are some people saying some writings and some papers saying, based on their research on this virus, this is what we can expect as being probable behavior for this virus. So, having these tools available, this knowledge, and the ability for treating this is going to be really important, especially if it can revive itself, even in somebody who's already had it. Survival Blog's got a great article that I wanted to just bring to your attention. But first, February 7th is the birthday of, this a couple days ago, the birthday of Laura Ingalls Wilder. She died February 10th, 1957. So Survival Blog highly recommends the Laura Ingalls Wilder books as well as her biography. And I agree. I've really grown to love that whole series and the Little House on the Prairie series. But her books are really amazing about that type of pioneer lifestyle, resilience, and rugged individualism. It's pretty cool. But a little side note there. So in Survival Blog today, there was an article titled Infectious Disease Protection by SAD. Survival Blog contributor just today. In this article, I will describe how to protect yourself and your family from the coronavirus and other infectious diseases. The current outbreak of the novel coronavirus is causing widespread concern and response by public and health authorities. In this article, we'll cover the following. What is coronavirus? How does it spread? Official response and recommendations for protection, and practical common sense recommendations for individual protection. So I want to push you over to that article, to survivalblog.com. And of course, they've got just a ton of information on anything and everything related to preparedness and self-reliance that you could ever imagine. But that article is up right now. It was just a little bit ago before I started the show. Infectious disease protection, things that you can do. And that's the title of the article, Infectious Disease Protection. But don't just read the article. What I found the most fascinating were the comments. There are a lot of people from the medical field who are reading this and weighing in. And there's so many little nuggets of information that can be gleaned just by reading through the comments. And read the article. I think that both of these articles that I just mentioned are going to be very important for us. If this doesn't burn out and it continues to spread, and affects us here at home, that it is survivable, that there are things that we can do. We can't do anything about what China's lying about or how bad it is. We have no bearing on that. All we can do is continue with our lives, take precautions, be able to take care of our own and get through it and come out the other side, because another one that's going to be worse is coming at some point in the future, not to mention everything else we have to contend with sociopolitically and everything else. It's a wild time. It's a great time to belong to the Lord. Somebody was saying there's millions of people that could be dead from this before it's over. Like, well, those people are going to need Jesus. So better spread the gospel, right? And in the meantime, be prepared to take care of you and your own, your tribe, your family, and those loved ones around you, your closest inner circle, and be watchful and be vigilant and learn all you can. There's a couple resources there for you to learn more. All right, stay tuned. Right after this, Lady Liberty with the next segment of Liberty State Radio. The Know Your Enemy series is really good. So if you do miss it and you're listening to the downloaded podcast version of this and you're not listening on Sunday evening, you can go to libertystate.org, click on the news tab, and all of those are posted over there. If it's not posted in time, you can also go to directly to libertystateradio.podbean.com. So anyway, that's it, guys. You have a blessed rest of the week. We've got a very busy week ahead of us. So you guys stay safe, and thank you for your prayers, and thank you for your support. This is John Jacob Schmidt, and you've been listening to the voice of the American Redoubt. Good night.